It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, you don't understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Thank goodness for that clip, because I name my teams randomly like that, and there are literally hundreds of them, although most of them don't need names. Like, they're just sort of best ball teams, now that you ask. But, you know, a few dozen of them need names, and I get to the season, and I can't remember why, what it was that led to, you know, some of these. I'm looking at it right now. Work beef is probably something from in here. We had a work beef, you know, just sort of these little gems that slip out. Bulldog says them, and I just write them down. Like, I literally do that right here in my notebook. And then, I'm drafting tonight. I need a name. What's in the notebook? Work beef. Really good. What I want, of course, we all want this, is in these big tournaments to get the email that comes out every week telling you who's in first place. I know it's so early, but the FFPC and other sites send out emails every week, like with an update on the standings. And sometimes the names, I mean, they could even be obscene, but sometimes the names are just super weird. A lot of these guys, I don't want to get to this point. I feel like my way is better, but a lot of these people draft so many times and they just number their teams. So literally, there's one famous guy in fantasy football who plays, it's believed he plays more than anybody else. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think. And I'm playing in one main event league with him, and his team name is 87. Which is because it's his 87th high-stakes team, and, you know, there are levels to this. But Taco Juice, I don't know where that came from. Panhandle Chipmunks, I think, was a thing with my brother-in-law, who's from Florida, and we were talking about chipmunks on that trip to Canada. I mean, Sense of Elk, that's a Bulldog one. We had Elk Salami one day that maybe I saw in the store. Thanks for asking, but now you know a little bit more about how these names, where they come from, and I just wish I kept better track of what they mean. Evidently, I'll stop at this one. Evidently, it's because it had to be when Dwayne Thomas died, the Cowboys running back from the early days of the Super Bowl. This guy, as you may know, he was, like, complicated. You know, I don't want to put it in a bad light. He was complicated. Wasn't really talkative with the media or anything. I remember one later on in his career when he was with San Diego. Has the show ever sounded older? San Diego in the NFL. He warmed up like all by himself in the end zone and then left the game early. Just, you know, kind of like a little bit of an Antonio Brown type thing. And so when he was with Dallas and they won Super Bowl VI, somebody asked him after the game on TV, like on the network, post-game broadcast, you know, something like, you seem to be moving faster than everybody else. And he gave a one-word answer, evidently, which everybody laughed, and I always loved that. So that's a tribute to that guy, Dwayne Thomas. Okay, we will have, we don't have Bulldog today, again, as you may have already discerned, but he's still not well enough to jump on. So, you know, good feeling about tomorrow, but he couldn't make it today. Paul Hamilton will join me at 3:30. And so I went to see, as I always do, when Paul is coming on, click on his Twitter and what is he writing about? And he wrote up about how the Sabres, when they were offside at one point in practice today, or maybe somebody missed an assignment, Paul will give the details. Lindy Ruff had them do push-ups on the ice. And, you know, I want to bring this up with Paul. It's the first thing he wrote about. I kind of feel almost like a little bit like I'm not doing my job fully when I say this. Like, I did this yesterday too, just how excited I am for Lindy Ruff. Like, I'm just, I've been waiting for something from the Sabres that feels good. And I thought that Eichel would feel good. And then it almost didn't. Quickly, it didn't. Like, it was just so... O'Reilly was supposed to feel good. Like, that moment. But then he's in that accident in Canada. And then the Eichel thing, it just got so ugly so fast. And really since Granato, I guess, in a way. But it just hasn't really felt good. And Lindy does that for me. But I do want to say, you know, saying all that and just generally feeling really positive about that, about his return, I think, you know, this kind of thing, it's his way. You know, Paul has said it, and I think maybe fans would have known it from when Ruff was here, that he can be tough. But what I think could be watched here, or should be watched here, is that now he's so much older than the players. And we've seen everywhere in sports, I don't want to say coddled necessarily. It's not, again, this is funny. This is the second time already I'm doing this. It's not necessarily good or bad. But, you know, players have just generally grown to have a lot more power versus coaches. You know, there's so much more money. And they're given more freedom. Coaching is different. I mean, it's so different, right? Even if we didn't play at a high level, we know this from paying attention to sports, how different coaching styles are now than when, I mean, you know, 30 years ago or whatever, just at a time when maybe most coaches had the power and the will, and they would make the choice to just, you know, run their guys into the ground, punish them. Really, that's the word, right? Punish them for mistakes. It's Herb Brooks and Miracle, you know, Herbies. And there, I guess there were some sprints today, too, if the Sabres messed up. I appreciate, this isn't really now the fan talking, but I appreciate the idea that the Sabres need discipline and they need structure. And part of why this is happening is for those purposes. And, you know, this isn't surprising, but the players themselves are saying that. You know, being willing to hold the guy in the locker next to you accountable and just taking it more seriously overall, because, you know, every time there's a coaching failure, you come out of it and you sort of identify, well, what was the problem? And then the next guy is meant to be the opposite of that. That can be offense versus defense in football. That can be, you know, just generally disciplinarian versus the so-called player's coach. So I don't think Ruff is going to be called a player's coach. We want this to be a good thing for the Sabres. We want this to be what they need. Push-ups and sprints, I think you got to be careful. I mean, he's 64 and they are 24. you got to be careful with that stuff. So I think, you know, Ruff is a smart guy. He's got tons of experience. I fully respect all of that. And I think, you know, he's talked about this going to Jersey and recognizing that he has to change, you know, to some extent to be able to relate to young players. He had a young, talented team there and it took off. I mean, they did great. It's the reason I needed to be able to support this idea. If Lindy Ruff did not have that season in New Jersey 2 years ago, I could just not get on board with this. It just would have felt like a marketing scam. But he did, and he took a young, especially because they were so young, that worked like it did. You know, he won a playoff round, seventh game, and like, you know what, I can buy this. And the next year, their goaltending wasn't as good, and maybe that kind of thing gets old, you know? I don't necessarily want to compare him to other coaches, but you can think of the guys that are the sort of disciplinary type, and they're usually older. And it doesn't last as long. You know, it's just the kind of thing where I think players used to, more than ever, a certain level of freedom and ability to kind of work things out on their own. And they're not used to being told to do push-ups in the middle of practice, I'm pretty sure. But that happened today. And I'm choosing to still be optimistic about all this. But that is the kind of thing that does worry me a little bit. Because the players are going to say how much they welcome. It's the second day of camp. They're going to welcome discipline. They're going to welcome experience. They're going to welcome credibility. Everybody knows the organization needs it. But I think that does have a shelf life. You know, not those things necessarily or exactly, but the push-up, discipline, hard-ass kind of stuff, you know, you got to pick your spots there. So Paul coming up in about 20 minutes, maybe a little less. Joe Ostrowski today, Sal Capaccio today. I was really excited yesterday about our conversation, talking about the stark changes in offensive production and tactics in the NFL so far. And I mentioned yesterday, getting into it just around now, how like my whole Twitter was X. Sorry. My whole Twitter was, I just want to make sure I acknowledge the fact that I know the name has changed, but I just don't want to call it that. It was all just people that I follow talking about this. Like, why aren't teams being able to throw the ball? Do they want to? What does really explain it? I would say that I haven't been online as much today, but I would say that today feels like more of a continuation of that, at least with more people talking, more people doing the work, trying to figure it out like we were doing yesterday. Like, why is this happening? Is it that top players don't play in the preseason? Is it that they don't practice as hard or as often? Is it...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Too high safeties, the so-called safeties in the parking lot. Is it something else? Like, what is really going on? And I follow people that I really admire for their ability to analyze this sport and figure out answers. And sometimes today they've been at odds about this, which probably means they're a little bit both right. Nate Tice is one such analyst, and he pointed out, like, his main takeaway is, why can't offenses move the ball and score? He said, in short, their offensive lines aren't good enough. And this has been a refrain through the NFL for many years. I think of Belichick, first of all, for this. Somebody pointing out, look, practices aren't as hard. It's funny, like, this sort of juxtaposes nicely with the Sabres thing. Practices aren't as hard. You don't have as many guys come into the league and they're not quite as prepared. Underclassmen. I would even think this could extend to the transfer portal guys who you have. I mean, take Ray Davis on the Bills. He played in three college programs in 3 years. Not an offensive lineman, but like, what do you want from Sal's point yesterday? What we know about the Bills. Continuity means a lot, and especially for younger college players bouncing around, you know, trying to get the right fit and get, you'd be able to get drafted, different things. That's the opposite. That's not continuity at all. So all the more reason to question how good the lines are, you know, not just how they operate, how they practice and develop in the NFL, but even players coming into the league. So you have good logical reasons to question that. And so that was Nate Tice's point. Offensive lines, the quality, the depth. So quarterbacks are getting rid of the ball quicker because they have to. And so you're not getting the ball 25, 30 yards downfield through the air if you don't have time to throw. Makes sense, right? Kevin Cole shows up, another really smart football analyst, and says, well, then why is this just happening now? If people have been complaining, you know, probably rightly, about these points on the offensive line, depth and quality, why is it so dramatically different last year or this year than over the previous few years? And, you know, 3-4 years ago, it was spiking the other way. And the offensive line point goes back more than a decade. I mean, it wasn't like it was really different 5 years ago. How much practice time, preseason, the college point, how different really was it? So I like that point too. You know, I mean, what does it probably mean? They're both right. Offensive line's not as good as going back years, but also, well, it's not just happening, so you want to be able to point to other things. Warren Sharp had a stat. This is really kind of incredible, I think. And it's, you know, maybe it lines up with the last part. Passes at or behind the line of scrimmage. That has shot up in the last couple of years. And really, this year over last year is a pretty big jump. This year, they're at 27.1%. Think about that. Would you have guessed that? 27.1% of NFL passes through 2 weeks did not cross the line of scrimmage. I don't mean where the play ended. The ball in the air. It's, you know, mostly by design. Flip to the running back. Passes to Dalton Kincaid, which seemed to never go past the line of scrimmage for some weird reason. Like that. You're throwing the ball short. Works in concert with don't have time, but, you know, this is really more, I think more, it's both, but more this is what we think we're going to have to do. My prediction for this Bills offense this year, all summer, was they are going to run the ball a lot more and they are going to play short. And that's exactly what's happened. And they are 2-0, and they've scored 30 points in both games. So we'll see how it goes. But it's exactly what's happened. It's a shorter, slower, quote, more conservative offense. Just, you know, run versus pass. It's exactly what's happened. And they're not alone, but sideways stuff. It really hasn't even gotten to Samuel yet. Samuel was one of, would have been like top of my list for why. You make that free agent investment. There's just not a lot going on otherwise at wide receiver. So I think they want to feature Curtis Samuel, and that's how you would do it. Like a better McKenzie, he would get handoffs, and he would not play sort of a traditional X receiver, try to beat the guy, jump ball kind of stuff. You know, you would be more, you know, seemingly more creative. That's how a coach would put it with him. That hasn't really happened yet, but this is still how they're playing. And this is how a lot of teams are playing. 27% of passes so far this season have not even crossed the line of scrimmage. So it's so many things. I think there's two more I want to say. One is, and this I brought this up yesterday, we've talked about this, the transition in the league at quarterback, as in like who's playing the position, contributes to this. It's running quarterbacks and it's rookies and second-year guys who are really not ready yet. Richardson, Levis, Caleb Williams, who definitely does not look ready, and he was supposed to be above this, but it doesn't look like it. Daniels, you know, these guys are different style of player. They're going to take off. Jaden Daniels has done a lot of that so far. Richardson didn't last week, but last year he did, week one. You know, they're going to go pretty quickly. Malik Willis is a backup, but he had this game, and that was all running in that game for Green Bay, distorting the numbers a little bit more. So you've got a transition at quarterback. I think the best point of all for me, a guy I've only talked to one time, but whose analysis I always sort of usually defer to, Jay Moyer, who said, look, this is simple. Without the reps, preseason, but also just practice. Here you've had defenses finally get to a point where they recognize we really don't need to obsess about stopping the run anymore. We're going to try to eliminate explosive plays. We're going to try to eliminate the big play. And if you want to run it on us, you should. We want you to. This is what I've been saying about the Bills forever. Like this is really one guy who looks super good in all of this around the league is Sean McDermott. Because this is exactly how the Bills, what they have stressed and where they have been successful as a defense. When they give up big games on the ground. I mean, a lot of times people line up to criticize them for that. I really don't care that much. I don't know if the Bills care that much. They have not built their team accordingly. What they have been good at is eliminating the big plays, and they have won constantly. And that correlates. So defenses have made, you know, generally, they've taken that step. And offenses have not figured out yet, because of, I think, the lack of repetitions, the offensive line point, the quarterback, all of it. They are settling. That is what offenses are doing, including the Bills. There's a balance between we need to do this and we want to do this, but they're settling for short stuff, for runs. There's quarterback runs in there too, and that's how we got here. And I still think, like I said late in yesterday's show, I'm still predicting that this will go back. And I think officiating will basically help that, because the league, I mean, another thing I said yesterday, I mean, I'm on a roll. Look, the league will not want, I guess we don't have proof of this yet, but this is how it happens. The league will not want ESPN, et cetera, talking all the time about how nobody can score and how the $50 million quarterbacks of the NFL can't get the ball down the field. That will become the narrative. It already has, and the league will not want that. And so what do we have today? We have Mel Kiper Jr. ranting about how they should ban two high safeties. Literally. Week 3 starts tonight. Ban. We got to make rules to fix the sport. It is way too early for that, if that's ever going to be sort of a sane take. It's way too early for that. But like, I don't think we should have to do that. But this is the conversation. And the league is not going to want to have its broadcast partners talking all the time about how nobody can score. So they're going to call different penalties coming up, and they're going to bring the scoring numbers up. And I think while you might not get quite as much passing production, because if these big chunk gains come on penalties, that's not going to show up in the stats. But I think end of the day, that will show up in points. And then everybody will calm down. I think that's where we're going. But it's, you know, I never like to roll the same topic out 2 days in a row. But it's so good. It's so good. Why is it happening? There's so many great points being made. And there's also points being made about changing rules. And it's just a great conversation right now. And we're right in the middle of this, and the Bills as a contender are a perfectly valid example of a team that is dealing with this. And I think they expect it to be, and I think they even wanted to be, which is to me not my favorite, but so far so good. That's another reason why I thought it would be like this year, because when they went to this kind of offense last year, they won almost every game. Why would they change it? They were willing to trade Diggs because they were going to play this way. Like, all of everything pointed to this. And what you have now is maybe a little bit of a tug of war coming within the league. All right, well, can a team keep winning this way? Is the league, are the rules, you know, if you will, going to change to a point where other teams can be successful another way? And then where does that leave a team like the Bills, who so far just want to play ball control? So thanks for listening on that. Should have a good show today. Paul next. Catch up on the Sabres day 2 of camp. Joe Ostrowski at 4. We'll look at week 3 starting tonight in the Meadowlands. And then Sal with the latest on injuries and some more on sort of the state of football right now coming up at 5. No Bulldog. This is Mike Shope on WGR.